Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Applications for the first round of high-speed rail stimulus spending were due yesterday. New York is asking for some $565 million for projects ranging from rehabilitating the Schenectady passenger station to building part of the Moynihan station in Manhattan. But even if funded, how close will these projects bring New York to a high-speed rail connection to Washington or to a rapid train from Albany to Buffalo? Joining us to discuss these projects and high-speed rail around the country is Jeff Anderson. He's president of the planning group Smart Growth America. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Jeff, explain yesterday's deadline. What was it about?
Well, under the stimulus funding, $8 billion was allocated for a new high-speed rail funding program, and combined with some other funds that the federal government had available. This really represented the first round of applications to go into the government for selection for projects that can be accomplished in a couple of different categories. The largest category is the shovel-ready projects to be completed in 2 years, but there's also availability of funding for planning, including activities to look at new rail corridors, as well as other inner-city passenger travel.
Now, there's that devil shovel-ready again, because, you know, that means, I mean, sort of, you know, this $8 billion came along in the stimulus program, and it was it represented, even though it's a drop in the bucket when you think about how much it costs to build a high-speed rail system, it also signaled a major change in federal policy, which is, you know, that the federal government was taking interest. And yet, if you look at, you know, what is shovel ready, I mean, take New York, for example. I mean, I'm just, you know, looking at, some of the things on the list. The Stuyvesant third track and interlocking improvements, Rochester Station improvements, Buffalo Depew Station improvements, Syracuse Station track improvements, you know, Albany Schenectady reliability improvement. These don't sound exactly like high-speed rail.
Well, I think The biggest thing to me, the thing that's most important, is that this is, as you said, a major shift in federal policy and really in thinking about transportation in the United States. And it's thinking about the future. It's thinking about doing things differently than we have in the past. That kind of transition to a system that really is a system where we have options, at the community level to walk and bike, to get on public transportation, to get around a region, and to get on passenger rail and high-speed rail to move us between regions and around the country and to connect the country economically. We can't get there in 12 months, 18 months, or 2 years. This is a long-term proposition. So I think it is important.
Oops, have we lost? I think we have lost Jeff Anderson. So while we're getting him back, let me put out a call for phone calls, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. We'd like to know if you have ridden high-speed rail in any of the other countries that have it, like Japan or like Europe, and what was your experience? And do you think it's a good idea to bring high-speed rail to the United States? After all, the U.S. is much less dense than Europe, much less dense than Japan. You have to build a lot of tracks and a lot of infrastructure to move people around. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. We'd like to know what you think about high-speed rail. And also the idea of 11 designated corridors. There are 11 corridors for high-speed rail in the United States, including the Northeast Corridor, the corridor in California, the corridor, there's a corridor in the Midwestern United States, Wondering if you think that it's a good idea to have so many high-speed rail systems, or whether you think it would be a better idea to maybe focus on just one or two. And let's ask that question to Jeff Anderson, president of Smart Growth America, who is now back with us. I was asking about the 11 designated corridors. Tell a little bit more about what they are and whether you think it's a good idea to have so many different high-speed rail lines in the sights of the U.S. government.
Yeah, sorry we got cut off there. I think what they represent is the places that really have the characteristics that you need to make high-speed rail success in terms of the population centers, in terms of the population densities, in terms of connecting economic hubs to other important economic hubs and giving people and communities between those and around those good connection as well. Ultimately, if you think about the transportation systems that have been very successful, they are systems. They absolutely have to connect to an entire region, to a network of different transportation choices. And the more that you can link those choices and link those systems together, the greater effect they have. So any individual piece of road system, for instance, you could say, well, this doesn't serve that many people, et cetera. But when it links into an overall system, it provides greatly needed access and the connectivity that makes our economy go ultimately.
But tell me a little bit about whether you think that this, sort of having 11 separate corridors is a good idea. I mean, I've heard your organization decry the peanut butter approach to stimulus spending, which is just sort of spreading it around.
Sure.
I mean, do you think you can get a good high-speed rail system with 11 corridors? I mean, that seems like a lot.
Well, I think, we have to put it in context. And the context is that compared to air travel spending, where the federal government has invested upwards of $10 billion over the past, per year over the past 30 years, upwards of $40 billion for the last 10 or 15 years in highway transportation. In that context, 11 doesn't look like a lot, and 11 looks like, potentially a pretty strategic set of investments. Now, you'd have to dig deeper on each of those to figure out which ones really make sense. But I think what we're talking about here is the long term. I mean, you don't think about this set of investments in a 10-year context. You think about where do we need to go as a country, and what kind of transportation systems are going to support us in that.
Now, $8 billion is a lot of money, clearly. I mean, $8 billion is the same amount of money, more or less, that was in the stimulus bill for all of transit spending all over the U.S. But it's not really enough to get you much high-speed rail. How much can $8 billion buy you?
Well, $8 billion can buy you, for instance, the somewhere in the neighborhood of the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, which is a pretty significant build-out of the Chicago area. Rail. It can meet the needs for the Florida corridor. But yes, when you talk about what can it buy you, given the demands that we're seeing coming into the program, given even the 11 corridors that we were just discussing, it's not a lot. And clearly, this $8 billion has to be and ought to be a down payment on the future, and it ought to be followed up by consistent investment over the next 10, 20, 30 years. In the same way that we have over the past 10, 20, 30, 50 years in air travel and in automobile travel.
Now, tell us what you saw yesterday. And I mean, I know that the applications are just coming in, but as you begin to digest them, what kinds of applications are coming in, and what states and regions seem to have their act together?
Well, I think we're still waiting to see that, really, in terms of the specific states and regions that have their act together. A lot of the applications really are about the kind of incremental improvements that you were referencing earlier, where people are looking at the existing system and identifying key points of congestion, key conflict areas between passenger rail and freight rail, and other very strategic incremental investments that you can make on existing lines that give you the biggest bang for the buck. At the same time, I think we are starting to see some of the applications really looking at entire new lines and places where they can really separate the passenger rail from the freight rail and provide truly high speeds in the sense of the high-speed rail that we see in Europe or Japan, places like that. I think places like Florida, California, the Midwest region, and the Hartford line, those are places that I think have some good prospects here, but we'll have to wait and see exactly what's in the applications.
What, I mean, I do want to go to the phones, but I just want to get your comment on Governor Patterson is very gung-ho behind an Albany to Buffalo high-speed rail. Is that a good idea?
Well, it, you know, so much of this really depends on the specifics, and I'd want to see the applications before making a comment on any particular line. I mean, it has to do with a number of factors, and of course, the one that gets a great deal of focus in the traditional discussions about this is how many riders will you get, and will it pay for itself? And while that's certainly important, I think it's limiting to think of it that way, because we have to think outside of the tracks, really, and off the system to the effects on the communities that they enter, the access that that provides, the kind of future growth and development that we're going to see around those stations, what kinds of systems in terms of public transportation, in terms of economic centers, in terms of access to jobs that these stations are going to end up providing, and what the future projections are as well. So I think we need to look across the board and understand its benefits both from a travel standpoint as well as in terms of building an economic foundation for progress in the future in these communities, in terms of protecting our energy independence and the environment and so forth.
Let's take a couple calls. Deborah from Stanford, Connecticut. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Yes, thank you. In the 80s, I was married to a Japanese man, and we would go over to visit his family, and we would take the bullet train between Tokyo and Kyoto. It was just such a pleasurable experience. I think a lot the issue has to do with culture, because even though they would have the pushers, and it was so many people packed in a small space on a small island, people were polite, and the etiquette dictated that you cooperated, and even though you were being pushed in, you could trust that if you put your handbag in one car and you were told to do that, it would be several cars okay when you got off. People were polite to each other. I commute on Metro North every day between Stanford and New York, and the lack of decorum and the lack of tolerance for each other and doing any kind of commute, I can't picture people cooperating like that. So I think there's a cultural aspect of looking at the people utilizing the system and whether they're going to be able to execute it well.
Let's ask that question to Jeff Anderson. Are Americans actually culturally ready for high-speed rail?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that Americans have shown over the past several years, and really if you look, for instance, at Amtrak over the last 2 years, they've seen an increase in ridership of 20%, that when there's safe, efficient, and reliable transportation, people will use it. If it's not safe or it's very uncomfortable, it becomes obviously less attractive. My experience is a little different in taking the train from Washington, D.C. up to New York, whether it's the regular regional train, which I take most of the time, or if I'm really pressed, the Acela. That hasn't been my experience. But certainly across the country, we're seeing increases, record highs in transit ridership. We're seeing increases in intercity passenger rail. So I think it is something that Americans have to become accustomed to and get used to as a transportation option. And certainly there's a certain decorum that I think we all expect and deserve when we ride public transportation.
Thanks for your call, Deborah. Let's go to Antonio from Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just I'm in favor for the high-speed rail in the 11 proposed corridors. But I also wanted to point out that it would probably have a positive effect on housing, because then, instead of everyone living in areas like Nassau County, Westchester, New Jersey, it would cause maybe people to look into areas a little farther out because they can get to it in a more efficient way. So that's basically my.
Well, how about that, Jeff Anderson? I mean, I know what Antonio was saying about sort of the spur of housing development. There was an economist, though, for example, that looked at the the what if you had a high speed rail line from Dallas to Houston, which are both in the top 10 in terms of population of United States cities, and sort of came to the conclusion that it wouldn't economically work because of the built environment that's already there.
Well, I think what we've seen across the country is that the investments like these have always shaped development. The connection between transportation and development has always been very strong. And as we've made investments in infrastructure and transportation systems that have encouraged less dense spread out development and encouraged destinations being very far away from where people live. And we've seen the result of that, and people having to travel very long distances and suffer with inconvenient commutes and even you know, not having convenient places that they can walk to in their neighborhoods. I think high-speed rail has the opportunity to basically provide a different kind of incentive where you have, and we've seen this with transit systems or public transportation stations, it tends to draw the development around it because people want access to that. And I think the high-speed rail actually can basically act as an anchor in many communities. One of the keys is going to be where these stations are located, though, because if they're located outside of center cities where people have to drive to get to them, it makes the trip much less convenient, and I think will reduce the effectiveness of both high-speed rail and its positive impacts that it can have on communities.
Is there any possibility, though, that some places are just too far gone?
No, I think there. You know, we've seen places that have really turned themselves around tremendously, and by that I mean a number of different scenarios. Places that have been virtually abandoned and left for practically dead, getting new investment and using that as the impetus for a major turnaround. Certainly, we've seen that in the Washington D.C. downtown areas. We've seen places that have been economically quite viable, like the Tysons Corner shopping area here, that are trying to convert themselves, partly with the spur of public transportation investment in the metro system here, into more walkable, livable neighborhoods and communities. And they're doing that because of the convenience, but also because of the economic realities that more people are wanting this, and it's a good opportunity from their financial self-interest perspective.
We need to wrap this up, but I just wanted to relay this question from a listener who writes on our comments page. I am all for the development of a high-speed rail network, but we have to understand it's not as easy to secure rights of way and satisfy environmental impact restrictions here as it is in the countries where these programs have been implemented. In France, the authorities are ruthless, using eminent domain, and a lot of private interests are damaged in a way that would not be tolerated in the U.S. Could we get your response to that, Jeff Anderson?
Well, I think we obviously have a different way of doing things than in France, and in many cases that's a good thing. We have solved those issues when it comes to things like highway projects and road projects of all kinds. We have to be intelligent about how we do that, but these are challenges that face a number of modes of transportation, not just high-speed rail, and you know, I think that's part of the process. But if we're going to be about, if we're not going to get gridlocked in our own traffic and in our own logistics, we're going to have to find ways out of those conundrums so that our future, is a livable one, provides safe and efficient transportation that's reliable and people can count on, and really builds a foundation for an economic future that we can all enjoy and prosper in.
Thanks so much. Jeff Anderson is the president of Smart Growth America, a transportation planning group, and we hope to have you back to check in on the progress of the high-speed rail stimulus funding initiative. Thanks so much. When we come back, the third guy running for New Jersey governor.